Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your Cognitive Rampage. You have to believe in the power of you. Uncomfortable is where the change is. And we are live on the Cognitive Rampage Network now with the episode of Adam Does the News You Missed. Science News and Discovery. Just try to press play on that. Okay. Nothing?
The new post just now?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're checking some technical difficulties here to see what happens. And, look at that. It works. Oh, I'm live now. Thank you, producer Patricia, for that slow intro there. Broadcasting live now directly from YouTube. So the Cognitive Rampage Network, as you may have noticed now, 7 shows, 1 podcast, 1 channel. We have multiple shows we'll be bringing to you. Adam Does the News is one of those shows. The Cognitive Rampage will remain also as our lead show, if you will. Still having on some cerebral guests, me doing my Cognitive Rampage, mental health help, and a lot more with the Cognitive Rampage. But a couple new shows that will also be on this network. The LMAO show, Cutting Up with Comedians. Our first show airs next Friday with a special comedic guest. He will be live in studio with us. I'll let you know who that is coming up. Well, I'll tell you, he's a killer. His name's Tight Mike. Wonderful comedian I got to meet when I was doing the NBC show, The Lowdown, with James Yawn. So, LMAO show coming up Friday. We'll be doing those weekly. The Cognitive Rampage for show 2. And obviously, He Said, She Said, Talking Love and Relationships. Patricia and I will be live actually tonight as well, Sunday night. That's every Sunday night we do that show. We also have The Fight Life. There are 2 episodes of The Fight Life up currently. You'll be seeing some more of The Fight Life podcast. That'll be on this network as well as Behind the Business podcast will be live as well, taking you behind the businesses with the stories that are behind those that have created successful businesses. So we have a few of those guests that will be on that podcast as well. And Patricia will be starting her own show, the PMS. Yes, the PMS, the Patricia May show, right? Not the PMS as you may have thought about, where she'll have some women on. It's basically a women's point of view on everything in the world, whether she'll be doing it by herself and have some other women on that podcast as well. I believe that's covering most of the shows that are going to be on the Cognitive Rampage Network. The good part about it is you subscribe to one show, one podcast, and it will all be there. Well, I think that's great. Yeah, double checking. Yeah, it looks like it's working there. I love it. Didn't take long. I love it when you check on YouTube to look at it. And already got 1 thumbs down already. Wonderful. Thank you very much for taking the time to thumbs down a first episode here of a podcast. That's so well appreciated, the fact that you care that much for anybody watching. But going to cover some news real quick on this show. We're not doing it as far as like all the top news. I like to cover some things that I read about that you may have missed. This one, we're actually covering some subglacial lake, some research on people who woke up from comas or who was more likely to, and some research with some blood donors as well. Some pretty cool science stuff that we'll be covering right now. So, solar-powered floating islands could extract CO2 from seawater to produce fuel. We all know about, well, the big oil issue, going solar, trying to get off of the oil teat, if you will, which I'm a fan of in any way. But a team of researchers from Norway and Switzerland have put forward a proposal for solar methanol islands that convert atmospheric carbon dioxide to fuel. The islands would have would have to be clustered together to create a large-scale facility. If enough of these facilities were built, they could eventually offset the total global emissions from fossil fuels and thus help us protect our climate from global warming. For those of you, I know you already went, oh my God, oh Jesus, right, as Bill Burr would say. Right, so researchers' proposal has been published in the PNAS. The researchers argue that although a massive reduction in carbon dioxide emissions from fossil fuel burning is required to limit the extent of global warming, the reality is that carbon-based liquid fuels will continue to be important energy storage media in the foreseeable future. My God. Therefore, they propose a combination of mostly existing technologies to use solar energy to recycle atmospheric carbon dioxide into liquid fuel. The making of these clusters of floating islands wouldn't be too difficult, they say. Most of the technology to build these facilities already exists, and there are numerous acceptable locations worldwide where they could be placed. I wonder how they do with hurricanes, but just wondering. The researchers suggest floating islands similar to large-scale floating fish farms. They would use photovoltaic cells that can convert solar energy into electricity. This would power hydrogen production and carbon dioxide extraction from the seawater. The gases produced would then be reacted to form methanol that can be reused as fuel, which is conveniently shipped to the end consumer. Pretty interesting stuff, though, if they can actually get it to that point. Facilities could be placed in the areas that met the physical conditions, where wave height was less than 7 meters. That'd be difficult to find, at least in my seabearing knowledge. Where there would be low probability for hurricanes, there you go, and the water depth is less than 600 meters. Well, I'm not sure where you're going to find, I don't know. Maybe I'm novice there, I guess, but not really. 600 meters of the islands can be adequately moored. Locations for facilities would be found across the globe. With the coasts of Southeast Asia, there you go, that's why I didn't know, Northern Australia and the Arabian Gulf particularly suitable. The team says 70 of these artificial islands would make up a single facility covering an area approximately 1 kilometer square and a half square mile wide. The team estimates that the output from the 3.2 million floating islands would exceed the total global emissions from fossil fuels. At the moment, they are working to develop prototypes of the floating islands. The biggest challenge is the development of the large-scale device to extract CO2 from the seawater. Study author Andreas Borchula told Newsweek, this process is only one of the total system that has not been fully developed and others exist already in industrial scale. If you see the picture of it, at least the drawing is pretty wild. I'll post this article on the actual link when we send this to thecognitiverampage.com and post it up so you can see what it may look like as they draw this up. It looks pretty wild, large looking, but I mean, look, if anything is going to advance to get us off oil, I am certainly a fan of and would be a fan of most definitely in any way, shape, or form. Just thought it was cool that it was posted up like that. And I don't know. You never know what science can bring, man. Big floating islands and stuff. You know what don't know what the future holds, man. But anything to get us off that oil teat for sure. But that was from intelligentliving.co, floating solar islands. You can look it up yourself as well and see the pictures if you want to. We'll have it posted again when we post this link up. Moving on, in other news, I thought this was just really cool to think about. A subglacial lake has been found beneath Antarctica's ice. I think that is just, I don't know, it's cool to think about, right? So it'll tell you about what a subglacial lake is. The Antarctic ice conceals a smorgasbord of secrets, once a warm, forested part of the world. During the age of the dinosaurs, many fossils of which are just waiting to be excavated. It also features the world's largest canyon system and a treasure trove of meteorites that were forged in the fiery furnace at the beginning of our solar system. There are also liquid freshwater lakes beneath the surface of the icy realm. I think that is so cool. beneath. Now, when we say beneath, it's way beneath, but it's pretty neat when they get into some stats here. Lake Vostok is probably the most well-known. After being left undisturbed for around 25 million years, scientists were overcome with curiosity, and it was carefully breached. Now, it appears that the researchers have another subterranean lake to add to their increasingly diverse collection of hidden geological gems. As revealed by the research team at the annual gathering of the European Geophysical Union, the EGU, in Vienna this month, it is second only to the size to the enormous Lake Vostok. The findings were reported by Motherboard. Ice at the surface is shaped by what type of rock is resting on it. So by looking at unusual geographic features using ground-penetrating radar, scientists are able to make good guesses as to what may be concealed beneath. This time around, the collection of groves at the surface revealed to the international team, who were in fact responsible for the canyon discovery last year using the same methods, that a subglacial lake complete with its own channels still exists beneath the ice. The lake itself is around 100 kilometers, 62 miles long, and 10 kilometers, 6.2 miles wide, and is ribbon-shaped. It also appears connected to the canyon, and channels leading away from it may be transporting water towards the West Ice Shelf and into the ocean. The researchers from the UK, China, and the US are meeting this May to discuss the radar data that have been independently gathered in order to try and absolutely confirm the existence of both the canyon system and the subglacial lake. Both would be an immense interest to biologists who are keen to explore ecosystems that have remained untouched for tens of millions of years. Whether or not these newly discovered regions contain life is yet to be seen. However, this possibility isn't a particularly unlikely one. The research team investigated Lake Vostok, for example, have found hints that simple microbes could still be thriving in these icy depths, possibly heated by hydrothermal activity, hot, mobile fluids associated with volcanic processes. Vostok was reported to have evidence of more than 3,500 different DNA sequences hiding within it, from bacteria and archaic to viruses and even fish. Be careful of the viruses that you open up here. A lot of old viruses can be buried in ice, etc. You can do a lot of research on that. Pretty scary when you start opening this stuff up, but even fish too, right? Not just viruses. However, the study in question has been openly doubted by other researchers, so more data is required before this can be settled. Life, however, has indeed been found in other lakes across the icy continent. A drill core from one, Lake Willens, contained 130,000 cells per milliliter of subglacial lake water, which is a density of life similar to that found in the depths of the world's oceans. This microbial life has survived without sunlight for up to 1 million years, so it seems more than likely that it can also be found in more of Antarctica's 350 buried lakes, including, of course, this new addition to the family. Now, if you go on to read the rest of the article, they talk about things that they found eventually, right? So this is kind of the opening article. They pull the core out, and they actually had to drill down 100 meters just to get down, or no, 300 meters just to get down to the subglacial lake. Then they went 100 meters into the lake and pulled the core from the bottom. And they ended up finding some microscopic crustacean-type fossils, which are pretty wild. There's some pictures of that, too. We'll put up on the link when we share this actual post. Pretty interesting stuff. And I'll see here. So the lake itself is around 100 kilometers, 10 kilometers long. I'm trying to get to where they actually talk about what they found. Anyway, I'll share the link, though, that'll bring it to you. So they found the lake. They drilled this core out, and they found some wild stuff. I wish I remember the name. I'll post it again when we put this up. But a bacteria that can live without water for like a decade or longer. This really amazing thing. It pretty much survives anywhere and anything. But there's some wild discoveries to think what they may find down there as they're pulling cores out like that. They found pieces also, like I said, of some frozen like birds and fish type things. So it can be wild what they find in there. Just thought it was neat. I mean, we don't really understand or think about what they're doing up there or how important Antarctica may actually be in the scientific research of our history, of how we were, you know, made, how we became here. It's pretty interesting to think about. So, Moving forward from there, IarsTechnica.com. Who will wake up from a coma? Electrical jolts in the brain offer hints. 44% with electrical activity woke up and recovered compared to 14% without activity. Researchers may have found a way to detect inklings of consciousness in comatose and vegetative patients just days after they experience a brain injury, and it appears the method may help predict which patients will arise and recover in the months afterwards. See, a lot of times people go to comas, especially head trauma, they just don't know, right? And sometimes people pull the plug, sometimes they hold on. This could be some research that kind of shows, look, the percentage is low that the person will wake up, right, and can allow people to begin to mourn and hopefully move forward. But also give some people some hope that if someone's in a coma, hey, there's still an actual scientific opportunity, not just hope here. A team of researchers in New York recorded electrical activity in the brains of unresponsive patients while giving them simple spoken commands such as keep opening and closing your right hand or wiggle your toes. Of 104 unresponsive patients tested, 15% showed some activity. Of those 16 patients, 8 of them, 50%, went on to be able to follow spoken commands by the time they left the hospital. A year later, 7 of them, 44%, were able to function independently for at least 8 hours at a time. In contrast, only 14% of those who showed no electrical activity early on reached that level of recovery after a year. The results were published this week in New England's Journal of Medicine. The study was small, and the authors caution that the results require validation in larger, multi-centered studies that are powered to detect differences in long-term outcomes. But if the findings hold up, the study could offer clinicians a way to help assess the patients, which patients may be able to emerge from a coma or vegetative state. Muted responses. The study isn't the first to find that some otherwise unresponsive patients show brain activity to spoken commands that doesn't seem to get translated to behavior, that is, actually wiggling toes, for example. Researchers call such a disconnect cognitive motor disassociation at a 2016 meta-analysis of dozens of studies have estimated that it occurs in about 14% of chronically unresponsive patients. That's close to the prevalence that the New York team found. The electrical activity appears to be a response to the spoken commands and perhaps is the brain recognizing and attempting to actually carry out the orders. But, as the New York researchers note, whether the detected signal represents recognition or comprehension of those commands is uncertain. Researchers also remain uncertain as to whether the detected activity has any bearing on patients' outcomes. A new study tries to get at the question by following up with patients over a year. All the work was conducted in a single intensive care unit with patients admitted between 2014 and 2017. Unresponsive patients were screened and tested in their first few days in the hospital. Researchers enrolled patients who were in a coma, in a vegetative state, or in a minimally conscious state minus state. Really what it's called, in which certain low-level behaviors are present. These include being able to follow moving objects with their eyes, visually fixate in response to pain or discomfort. The cause of these conditions in the enrolled 104 unresponsive patients varied. Some patients had experienced cardiac arrest, while others had suffered traumatic brain injuries or hemorrhages. Eye-opening jolts. The researchers used a common, relatively easy-to-use test to assess brain activity. A EEG, it picks up electrical pulses using electrodes attached to the scalp. In this case, a standard assembly of 21 electrodes was used. EEGs are often used to diagnose epilepsy, assess brain activity after a stroke, or during sleep disorders. The researchers conducted these tests in 25-minute spoken command sessions, testing 104 unresponsive patients along with 10 healthy people as a control group. Of the unresponsive patients, 16 showed electrical activity while 88 did not. Over the following year, 6 with EEG activity and 50 without it died. Some because they were taken off of life support, 4 and 24 respectively. That's where it kind of touches in, right? I mean, people remove them from life support based on, maybe science, maybe not, maybe just outcome, maybe doctor opinion. This is kind of what I mean about the brightness of this is it could rule out the doctor's opinion and bring in actual science to what the possibilities really might be. But seven of the original 16 with EEG activity rallied and reached a recovery level scored as a 4 or higher on the extended Glasgow outcome scale. This is a clinical scale that ranks outcomes of brain injuries from 1, being dead, to 8, upper good, which is generally a resumption of normal life. A score of 4 is considered upper severe disability. Patients with this score are dependent for daily support, but can be left at home alone for 8 hours or more. While 44%, 7 patients with EEG activity after injury made it to a 4 or higher in a year, only 14%, 12 of the 88 patients without EEG had a 4 or higher. The study was not large enough to link such outcomes to any causes of brain injuries. It's the fact they're still working on it that I love this story, that they're still trying to find a way to maybe bring people back, see if, you know, if you have the time, if there's hope, anything that can offer scientific hope beyond the doctor's personal and studied opinion is something that I just, it offers hope to me when I read this, right? So I like the story of science. I don't know, this is a science edition of Adam Does the News too. So moving on. Researchers have found a way to convert donor blood into a universal type. Makes me nervous a little bit. In June 2018, the American Red Cross declared an emergency blood shortage. It was just not receiving enough donations to help patients who needed blood. In July 2018, the American Red Cross declared an emergency blood shortage. It was just not receiving it. Researchers from the University of British Columbia might have found a way to address the problem even if people are not donating more. Convert a less usable blood type into one that anyone can receive. In August 2018, they presented their research at a meeting of the American Chemical Society, and the results have now been published in the Journal of Nature Microbiology. According to Science Alert, blood types are different because of the sugars on the surface of the red blood cells the body creates. Type A, one type of sugar, and type B has another. Type AB has both sugars. Type O does not have any sugars. If a person receives a blood transfusion of a blood type that isn't their own, their immune system will attack and kill the donated blood cells. For instance, a person with type A blood could never receive a type B donation because their system would reject the new blood because their sugars aren't quite right. Because type O blood does not carry any sugars, anyone can receive it. It is the universally accepted blood type and therefore highly desirable. In the past, researchers discovered that certain enzymes, molecules, which cause chemical reactions could remove the sugars from A, B, and AB blood cells, converting them into more useful type O. According to researcher Stephen Withers, however, they had not yet discovered an enzyme that was safe, efficient, and economical. The search for this enzyme took them into the human gut. Withers and his team already knew the lining of the digestive tract contained the same sugars discovered on the blood cells as well as the bacterial enzymes within human feces striped with sugars from the lining to power digestion. Using that knowledge, the researchers managed to isolate an enzyme which strips the sugar from A and B blood types, turning them into type O 30 times more efficiently than any previously discovered enzyme. The researchers are double-checking their findings for now. The next step would be to test the enzyme in clinical setting that would help determine whether the conversion process produces any unintended consequences. All this extra testing could still take some time. However, Withers is optimistic that his team's enzyme could be a breakthrough. We need to ensure anybody who needs blood donation in the future will be able to receive one. That in itself is amazing science and could change and save many, many lives. Being an emergency with blood shortages like that, I mean, look, I'm sure, as you're probably thinking too, I don't want that blood that's been manipulated to work for me if I can help it. But if you can help it and there is a shortage and someone is dying, yourself or someone you love, one day maybe that won't be a problem. Maybe a shortage will not be a problem one day. And that is something to certainly look forward to. Today was a science episode on Adam Does the News you missed. A lot of times, I'm sorry, in the mainstream, especially the Democratic debates going on, Trump being him and everything else, a lot of times we miss these really unique scientific research articles of what people are doing, what these amazing scientists are doing and trying to discover, trying to find. So a huge shout out, a lot of appreciation to those scientists out there, men and women alike, that are doing the research to better people's lives, to find out about the history of us from subglacial lakes to who or who may recover from comas and blood and brain trauma, as well as converting blood into type O blood, which is amazing. I mean, those researches alone, and then as well as these floating islands mixed with solar and water energy, pulling CO2 to make fuel as a way to, well, I don't even care if you believe in global warming or not, okay, so I'll just kind of speak generally, just a way to get off the oil teat in a way, and also help reduce carbon emissions. So, I mean, and if all those sciences in the next 10 years, 40 years, 50 years, what does that look like? It gives you a lot of hope out there. So I hope you enjoyed this second episode of Adam Does the News That You Missed, Science Discoveries Edition, only the second one. And again, stay tuned here and subscribe now if you haven't on iTunes and as well as YouTube. We're on Stitcher if you have Android, and follow and like the page on Facebook. Find us on Twitter too, Instagram as well. But as you heard in the beginning of this podcast, The Cognitive Rampage has become a network. Yes, The Cognitive Rampage itself, that podcast itself, will remain. Cerebral guests coming on as always, me doing my thing with some mental health help also along the way, but with six other shows behind it. Adam Does the News You Missed is one of those shows. Patricia is starting her own show, The PMS, The Patricia May Show, for a woman's view on the world. She'll be having women all on the podcast and also herself talking about that. He Said, She Said, where Patricia and I talk love and relationships, and that will air every Sunday, including tonight, not far from now. That'll be every week. And the LMAO show, Cutting Up With Comedians, starts this coming Friday, where Type Mike, Randolph Type Mike, will be on the podcast, a well-known name here, certainly in Orlando and around the comic spots in the United States. A wonderful guy. I met him doing the Lowdown on NBC's Afro Channel with James Yawn. Wonderful show. Hilarious dude. So we're just going to cut it up and talk. Spunky Robinson will be coming on as well onto the LMAO show, as well as some other people you know in the area. So you'll also see Behind the Business coming up. Got a couple special guests booked for Behind the Business. That's where we, well, bring successful business owners and people in business on the show to tell their stories on what led them to run a successful business and, well, give you some tips along the way, maybe some motivation, their philosophies, inspiration, that kind of thing. But it's a business-focused podcast, as well as the Fight Life podcast will continue. Two episodes have already been posted of the Fight Life. We take you behind the lives of those that choose the fight life. Two wonderful episodes up currently. You can find that at adamlowry.com, also on iTunes, where you can subscribe to us. But all the shows are up there that are currently, so look out for these shows that are coming. It's going to be fun. The Cognitive Rampage Network, 7 shows, 1 podcast, 1 channel on YouTube. Subscribe, tell your friends, hang out, think about it. You don't have to subscribe to 7 different shows to, well, hear topics that we're talking about in those shows. One podcast will be carrying them all in one channel. So stay tuned. We will be adding more shows too. So as we produce more shows, we find people that we believe have a good thing going and a good show going. We may be producing those shows as well. We'll be doing it from inside this studio. We have a couple other studios, and we're working on a main studio downtown Orlando that should be pretty unique once we get that up and going. But a lot of things, a lot of changes, but things that also stay the same here at thecognitiverampage.com. Hope you enjoyed this. Hope you subscribe. Hope you follow, like, and do all the other stuff. Look, if there's something you're interested in, just shoot us an email to cognitiverampagepodcast@gmail.com. Whether you want to, you know, want us to share your story on He Said, She Said, something you're dealing with, or any comments to any of these shows, or just to say hi. Send us over here at the Cognitive Rampage Podcast at Gmail. Send us some stories of news that you found that maybe I can help share on the news you missed, that maybe, you know, missed the mainstream or even a couple clicks below the mainstream. Send us that news too. I'll be more than happy to give you credit for sending us that news and information. But again, hope you enjoyed Adam Does the News You Missed. Stay tuned for a whole lot more. We will be back live, Patricia and I, with He Said, She Said, episode 17. Yes, you do have a type. That's the open topic that her and I will be discussing some articles on that as well. All right, we'll be seeing you around. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you live in your cognitive rampage.